You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
The snap, the kick, it's been blocked again! Oh my! It's been blocked again! He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone! It's a touchdown! And the Gators have won the game! Tyreek Cleveland! Oh my! I can't believe what I just saw!
Dropping back the throw, pops and fires the ball. Over the middle.
Have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your boy Corey.
It's Dan.
Della Torre.
And your boy Jay Scott 25. What it do, y'all boy?
What up, 25?
Yes, sir.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, fellas. Dan, I seen you doing a downward dog in Columbia.
Yeah,
update the fellas, man. Oh. Bro,
yeah, Dan, I know.
Dan's going cheeks on the IG timeline, just butt in the air. Post.
Yeah, a little crow pose. So yeah, no, I went to as you guys probably know, went to Columbia Tuesday through Saturday. Incredible trip. A lot of hiking, horseback riding. A lot of yoga twice a day for yoga. We did like a meditation thing. We went into Medellin a few times, went to Comuna 13, went downtown to some of the tourist areas, went to a what I would be the equivalent of like maybe a Chinatown in New York City. Obviously, it wasn't Chinese. It was definitely Colombian. And but a lot of open air shops and stuff like that. But a beautiful town. We had an Airbnb on a mountain that overlooked the city. A beautiful town, nice. Beautiful people. Great time down there. Would highly recommend it. But if you're going to go, you have to know Espanol. Not a lot of English. Not even as a touristy spot. So either brush up on your Duolingo or bring a Spanish-speaking friend with you because you're going to have some trouble.
I do you one better, Daniel. Get yourself some Meta glasses, and you can use the translation.
Will it speak back what you need to say?
Because
I understand enough.
Sign language, my boy.
I understand enough Spanish to get by about 40% of the way there. It's speaking it that I forget. But beautiful town. It was an elite vacation. It was one of the best that I've been on. I had maybe – two drinks there, was up at 5:30 every day, well rested, just what the soul needed. But then coming back, of course, I got delayed 3 hours in Miami. The airline lost my baggage, and so that didn't come until Sunday. So it was really a test of how meditative and zen I was. And
Dan studied for the test, and then God was like, okay. I appreciate you preparing yourself. Boom, right. Boom, boom. There's your test. Yeah. How's your zen?
Exactly. Man, but you know when it's been all day and you're traveling, you just want to get home and then you get delayed. And then we had to switch planes because ours had some sort of issue. So you had to walk to the clear other side of the Miami airport to get there. And then everybody's bag but yours makes
worst
it. You're the last
America,
one standing at the airport. Beautiful trip. Highly encourage everybody to do that. For me, it was just an awesome kind of enlightening experience. So really glad that I got to go. What about you guys?
Lauren, a little under the weather. So solo dad, big vibe, big solo dad vibes all weekend. Great recruiter, recruited grandma to do the errands we had to do on Saturday. 5-star blue chip recruit. Came in, was ready to play right away, day one. So we handled Saturday. Sunday was a long day. Sunday was a long day. We're still recovering from that, but solid weekend with Frankie.
Heck yeah.
Nice. I did get into a lot, but it's a lot of the same old. Pop Warner, great game. We won 3-1 on the season. Had to go down to Miami to get some work done. And also my dad's birthday. I know it's September. A lot of the dads on this show, birthdays in September. Celebrated Pop's birthday. He's a listener of the show. Happy B-Day, Pops.
Big fan of your dad.
Pretty cool guy. You scared my dad on the boat that one time, though.
Yeah. I get it.
He still tells that story, man.
Yeah, I get it. I missed the low wake zone sign. It was new fresh waters. I know what to do now.
Yeah, no doubt, man. But solid weekend, bro. Just a lot of back and forth to Miami. That's about it. Joy, what about yourself?
Corey Jordan, one second before you guys go, I'm going to be down for Valentine's Day. There's a music festival happening. Calvin Harris and Kygo.
Okay. So if you guys want to go,
it's Columbia's happening. Out the window.
Wow.
Columbia
is out the window. It's a one day. Calvin Harris and Kygo. It's going to be great. So it's on Valentine's Day. I'm not expecting you guys to, you know, do that instead of hanging out with your wives, but there might be some time to hang out.
Definitely. Let's put the boat out, brother.
Yeah.
You down just for one day or you down for like the weekend?
No, I'll be down for the weekend. I'll be down for the weekend. So we can get out to Peanut Island if you want.
Yeah, let's take the ladies out on the boat or something. Hang out.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down.
Are you Valentine's Day by yourself? Like, what's your?
No. Sarah's coming. Yeah. Oh, no, okay. Sarah's coming. Yeah, I actually haven't told my parents. So yeah, parents, we bought tickets the other day. So.
Yeah, man, I had a pretty chill weekend. I went up and saw my grandmother up in Sarasota. My brother lives with her, so I just went up there, brought the kids up there for a few days, came back down on Sunday, so I can catch all the football. Figured it was a good weekend to travel while I was no Gator football on, so. Pretty boring weekend, but got to get out of the house and get the kids to go see some family.
Awesome, man. Well, Corey, we've got another 2-5 waiting for us in the green room. So why don't we get a quick Brent ad read, and then we'll bring in Brandon James.
Yes, sir. One time for the great folks at Brunt Insurance and Financial Services. Anything you need insured, from the panhandle to the keys, my man Greg is the best in the business. Life insurance, home insurance, auto insurance, mobile home, motorcycles, ATVs, anything with wheels, wheelbarrows. You might get those as well. I'm not sure, Greg. You know, let them know when they call. But it don't cost nothing to get a quote. I'm pretty sure he can save you some money. Visit bruntinsurance.com or 954-589-2204 for the best in the business. Greg, what it do?
Greg, what it do, baby?
All right, with that, from St. Augustine, Florida, we welcome probably the best special teams specialist the Gators have ever had, a consensus All-American in 2008, the SEC Special Teams Player of Special Teams Player of the Year, 5 career return touchdowns, also a member of the UF track and field team. It's the other 2-5. What's up, Brandon?
How y'all doing, man?
What up?
Appreciate y'all having me. Thank you for having me on, man. Appreciate y'all.
Absolutely. I will remember you and your career. I'm a year older than you, but we were kind of there at the same time, and it was there at that Tennessee game in 2000. And
Tennessee has 8. Brandon James. Nightmare.
Yeah. Brandon James is not allowed within 100 feet of the stadium. the whole state. Brandon, I want to ask you, when we talk to everybody, we kind of ask them about their story, about how they ended up at UF. So talk to us a little bit about you committing to the University of Florida.
So that process was kind of unique because I had a half brother that I was going through the recruiting process with. We both were going to St. Augustine High School. They were recruiting him first. They were kind of on him kind of throughout the process. Florida kind of came on late with me. And growing up, I never really was a big UF fan. I grew up, obviously, but I was a big Florida State fan. So when they kind of came on, it was like, because they were late and they were, you know, kind of offering your brother first, you kind of felt like the girlfriend that they didn't want at first. So I didn't really want to kind of jump on. But at the same time, you know, you fell in love with the atmosphere when you go over there to a game. And once Coach Meyer and Coach Madison did start recruiting me, it was just something that it was hard to turn down. They were only a big Florida school that offered me. So at the end of the day, once you go on, you know, going to a recruiting visit, going to a game, it's hard to kind of turn down the swamp in that atmosphere.
a lot of playmakers on that team when you were getting recruited and then when you came on a campus, did you know that you were going to be the starter right away or, you know, at kick and punt return or was that a pretty feisty competition? Talk to us a little bit about how you were in that spot.
I mean, throughout the recruiting process, Coach Meyer said that would be a chance for me to get on the field early. He always said that. So coming in, you know, I knew that was kind of going to be a shot that I would have. But again, like you said, you're going to, you know, you come in with all those star-studded kids, Jared Faison, you know, Percy Harvin, two guys that I know easily could have returned. So you're fighting with those guys. So, you know, it was nothing that was guaranteed, you know, throughout process. I just tried to, you know, early on just make a name for myself, obviously with my size and everything. You know, first impressions is everything, right? So I wanted to be a tough guy that, you know, was willing to do whatever it can to make a play or whatever it can to make an impact on the team. So I think that kind of, I think Percy was the first guy to get his strike removed than myself. So I think after that, I gained a little traction and kind of just rolled downhill from there.
Brandon, what was it like just growing up as a smaller guy playing football? Because it's a big man's game, right?
So yeah, for sure. Safeties were allowed to hit back then.
Yes. Yes. To answer your question, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What was your journey like as a smaller guy, your developmental process?
Well, it was tough. I can remember early on, my dad was, he played football as well. He was an All-American at Samford University. He actually played for the Bowens. And I remember he was kind of like one of the first guys, obviously he's my daddy's big mentor, but one of the people I looked up to playing, watching him play, right? And so he was one of the first ones to kind of shoot me down saying, you know, your size is going to be a big thing. You know, like it may be tough for you. Right. And so, you know, I tell kids that I coach now, you know, I didn't really need a chip on my shoulder because that was the chip of just my size and everyone saying, oh, your size, your size, your size. It was something that I just carried with me all the time. Whenever I would compete, basketball, baseball, football, track and field, whatever I would do, I would just make sure that was something that, you know, that would be the last thing people would be thinking about when, you know, they got done watching me play.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? High school, you just mentioned almost every sport available. What was the season? The kids are specializing now so young. What was a year like for you?
Well, I played everything. So again, football season, and then you finish football, you go straight to basketball. I played baseball all the way up until high school, and then obviously I started running track, so it was tough. I couldn't do the Deion thing of both doing 1 year. So I kind of just took on track. So, you know, every season you're doing something. And I loved it because, again, what I learned from playing different sports and even raising my son now, putting him in different sports, you know, each sports has its own, you know, whatever you have to attack, however to be good at that sport, it has its own thing that you have to be good at, right? Skill set, I guess you would say. And, you know, you have your own challenges with each sport. Baseball has its challenges. Track has its challenges. Basketball, same thing, right? And so I think all of those different sports help you in your main sport when you come back around to it. And that's what I felt like it did for me in my game. I know we grew up playing a lot of AAU basketball. We used to play some of the best players in the country in AAU basketball, and we were a small team. So when it got to football, and we always were smaller than people, why would we care about that, right? Track and field, being able to, you know, compete by yourself and all the pressure being on you. I know as a punt returner, that was something that I would always think about, you know what I mean? So, again, I think every sport has its benefits to your main sport.
Yeah. Brandon, I didn't know that you suffered from spinal meningitis when you were a baby. I suffered from the same thing. So I read an article about you today.
Seriously, you did? You did, yeah. Seriously?
Oh, yeah, that's crazy, man. The exact same thing. I don't know how old you were. I think that you were a little closer. I think I read in the article that you actually passed away briefly. Yes. I came back. But yeah, at a few months old, I had spinal meningitis. They weren't sure that I was going to be physically or mentally well. Physically, yes. Mentally unwell. So yes. I'm dealing with that. But, no, it's a fascinating story. Not to make light of that, but I want to talk about you know, coming to UF. You're probably a little bit less heralded than some of the others in your class, Percy Harvin, Tim Tebow, Jared Faison, the rest of them. You know, going, and I know you said you got your stripe removed second. What was your mentality going in there, and how did you have to prove yourself? And I know you did the special teams thing, but talk to us a little bit about getting yourself mentally right on this team that, you know, was very much poised to be a national, you know, contender, and going in and playing as a freshman. You were probably one of the only ones that got significant playing time that year. But tell me a little bit about your mentality there.
Well, confidence is something that, again, when it comes to competing, that's something I'm never lacking. So even though I'm a smaller guy, there was no confidence wavering going in, right? So I just felt like if I got an opportunity or when I got my opportunity, I was going to always show that I belong. And I think early on in camp, we did the tackle drill. We call it make you miss drill. And that was kind of like my coming out party. That was kind of when everybody figured out, well, I mean, this kid can play. We can't tackle him. You know, I mean, from Brandon Siler, who was all SEC back linebacker at the time, to, you know, Spikes and guys that I came in with, they all struggled to tackle me. There was a couple weeks I went before I got tackled within that training camp, right? So I think just the mentality of just having the confidence of knowing I could do it. And, you know, again, when the opportunity was given or when the practice reps were given, I just took advantage of them. Mm-hmm. That was something that I was looking forward to the whole time. So, again, I don't think I just went into it confident and was just itching for the opportunity to go show it.
Did that Urban Meyer D recruitment hit you? Because I know he's a hell of a recruiter and he's super friendly, get you on campus, and then that thing kind of flip on you once it's time to compete. What was that like for you?
Well, he definitely is like that, but I'm a big Urban Meyer fan because one thing about Urb and I can relate to as a coach is if you can play, he's all for you. You're right. So I love the hard coach and I love being held accountable, especially when he can appreciate that he calls it a baller. When you can ball, he's all for you, right? So holding me accountable on the field or playing anything like that between the lines, I loved it, right? Because he was just going to make me better and it would just fire me up as a competitor. Now, all the stuff off the field, the going to class and the tutoring, that's when we would bump heads or that's when I had issues. But on the field, man, I loved him. The way he pushed us, the way he grind us, the mind games to get you to, go somewhere else in your mind to keep going. I think those are all things that I, you know, again, as a coach today, I took on myself and applied to my players.
I was thinking, man, what's your personal opinion? I'm kind of skipping forward here, but what's your personal opinion on the Swamp Netflix film that they did for us? You feel like it did any justice to what kind of went on? Do you got any stories that you could add to it, something like that?
First of all, I'm a part of it, so I've definitely felt like it was, it was good. I felt like at the end of the day, a lot of people look at it as like, well, a lot of stuff was left out. Mm-hmm. And I know being a part of that, one thing I don't want to be left out is how good we were and how we actually had the ability to win almost, four in a row. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How close we were in those 4 years with, our first year winning it, second year, the LSU team that, we had a chance to beat, and then Tennessee playing, all those different things that happened. Third year, fourth year, how it went, losing to Alabama. So I didn't want that to be lost. If you talk about all the drama and the going to jail and all the stuff we were doing, will that take away from how good of a team we were? And I didn't want that to be lost within telling the story. So I thought they did a good job of like balancing it. Yeah, you can make a whole documentary of how we were college kids, having fun, enjoying being stars in college. You can easily do that, but you don't want to diminish how good we were while we were doing that, right? So I think they did a good job of trying to balance it the best they could.
Yeah, that was a good one, because I know a lot of people is back and forth like, oh, they left out a lot of the juicy stuff, blah, 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 blah. But you make a great point in saying like it definitely would have took away just how good y'all actually were and stuff like that.
Yeah, people love drama, man.
Hello.
Yeah, drama sells.
You still there?
You hear us over there?
I think his sound went out. We can hear
you. I'm sorry. You got me now?
Yeah, we hear you.
Yeah, we got you.
We got you.
Okay.
That might even be something else, because like some of y'all could party. I remember there was a whole downtown story, but it's like
you gotta go full gun on us, man. Go ahead.
No, like play hard, practice hard, play hard, enjoy the fruits of your labor.
No, we actually were that crew. No doubt.
Yeah, oh yeah.
No doubt. Yeah. I think we learned it from that my freshman year, that senior class, Marcus Thomas, Ray McDonald, Jarvis Moss, all that crew there. They were the party animals that myself, Spikes, Percy kind of took. They took us under their wing and kind of taught us early. And, we fell in love with the lifestyle, right? But again, man, like you said, we were able to do it. I can remember a story, talking about a story, right? I'll give you one story. One story, we're working out. We had to do the stadiums. And stadiums are always like 5:45, 6 something in the morning. And I'm a freshman at this time, right? So, I'm making sure I go to bed early, bright and early, wake up. So we get there early, we're ready to run stadiums, and we got a bunch of guys late. Well, the bunch of guys late end up being like, Brandon Seiler, Jarvis Moss, Marcus Thomas, Steve Harris, all these guys, all the older guys that are captains are late. So they proceed to come late, smelling just like ABC liquor. and they end up catching up and beating everybody on the stadiums, right?
Hey,
so they win. They come late. They're like 15, 20 minutes late. They catch up to everybody, beat everybody. So now Coach Mick is trying to punish everybody else because, you know, they're making us look bad. And literally they're eating the workout, laughing, joking, drunk as hell the whole time. And you find out, you know, you learn right then that, hey, man, if you're going to party, you're going to do whatever you're going to do. You better be able to handle yourself. Because these some grown men right here, and they're able to do it. So, you know, that was kind of my introduction right there, learning how to, you know, balance, I guess you would say.
Right.
Brandon, did you guys battle the locals? What was the local like guys like for you college studs that are on the party scene?
It was a little bit of that, but we had a lot of love as far as just like people that we knew in Gainesville. I have some family members, I would consider them now, Jason Phillips and some guys like that from Gainesville that took me under their wing that pretty much I was from Gainesville when I was over in Gainesville. So, yeah, at times I would really say it was more college kids than anything that did the hating and, you know, were mad about the girls and stuff like that.
What was the club spot? Was it Excess?
Plasma.
Yeah, there's Plasma. Excess was in Midtown. You guys were a lot of downtown guys, if I remember correctly. There's like a couple of you guys
until you weren't downtown.
Yeah. And even when we weren't allowed, we were still downtown.
That's funny. You're talking a lot about your freshman year. Obviously, you win the national championship that year. The following year was Tebow's year, but your room specifically, that 07 class, Demps comes in, Rainey comes in. I think we got the story from Demps and Rainey about their foot race, but what was that competitiveness like? You know, it was like the long rumored racing in the parking lot of Keys. What was just that competitiveness like? Because you guys weren't separated much by classes, no. And all of a sudden you've got all this speed and all this talent in that running back room.
Well, it was always a thing, you know what I mean? You're always competing. You're always trying to talk about who's the fastest. I mean, I'm realistic. You quickly find out that when you're in the room with an Olympian, you know, he got to tip your cap, respect, right?
Yeah.
I think the only guy that can truly say they might be able to run with Jeff was Percy. Now, Rainey will tell you different, but, you know, Demps was different.
He did. Rainey had his own version of the story completely. Yes.
He always has plenty of stories.
He said in 40 yards he got him. After that, Demps just pulls away.
Yeah, I don't believe that either. You know what I mean? Demps is different. That's different speed. And again, I really truly think the only one could run with him was Percy. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, it was just, you know, competition. And again, I think Coach Meyer did a good job of recruiting. And that's what made us so great. We pushed each other. We talked crap to each other all the time and, you know, said who was the best at this or who was better at this. And I think it just pushed everybody to always go on that field and have to show it. And you know, that's why it was easy for us to hold each other accountable, because it was always that competition piece of like, well, if you can't do it, then all right, I'll do it. You know what I mean? Or they'll give me the ball and, you know, we'll get it done. That type of thing.
That's always fascinating to me. Sorry, real quick. It's always fascinating to me because like, especially at some positions, like there's only one ball, only a little bit to go around, not, you know, competing, but not getting jealous of somebody else's success and doing stuff like that. Like it always seemed like you guys were, whether Percy scored or you scored or Jeff or Chris scored, your room was there to like pick them up. So it's always interesting to me to see how you get over that jealousy and just really bond when you're all thinking in your minds like, hey, I need to put up numbers because this is my livelihood. I need to go to the NFL. How does a coach get that out of you, whether it's position coach, head coach, or is that just kind of how the locker room was?
I mean, obviously it's tough, but I definitely think that's how the locker room was. We were an extremely close group. I think from between, you know, my class, the 06 class, and the 07 class, we were extremely close. That's one thing people didn't know, you know. Both classes, we were here obviously first, and then, you know, we won it that year. So they come, a lot of those guys came early and got to experience that with us, whether it was the Pouncey's, Rainey. I think Joe was here early as well. You know what I mean? I know, you know, Hernandez and, you know, Deontay Thompson were as well. So it's like, you know, a lot of these dudes, Cam, he came early as well. So all these guys were here early. So we kind of just, we gelled. We would always compete with them and everything like that. Major is another one, but, at the same time, they were like our little brothers, and you know, we wanted, you know, those guys to be successful as well. So I think it was just a friendly competition that at the end of the day, we always knew at the end of the day, we wanted to see everybody shine and, you know, be on that field doing their thing.
Are you safe to travel in the state of Tennessee?
Banned.
For sure. I've actually, crazy story. We actually have a receiver that's pretty big. He just committed to Miami this year, but we took him to Tennessee this past offseason. It was crazy being up there and meeting Phil Fulmer and all that stuff there. So, yes, I am allowed up there, though.
Good. Just walk me through just like, you know, that experience, man. Stadium's loud, balls in the air, it's hanging, you know, pause. Woof. but you know, you got some SEC caliber guys streaking down the field, and you gotta, you know, keep your focus, secure the catch, and then gotta make that first guy miss and start to dance a little bit. So just walk me through what that's like from your perspective.
I mean, it was something that was, you know, obviously a little bit natural to me. I had been, you know, doing that since I started playing football, right? As a center fielder, returning punts was something that helped me, you know, playing baseball. So the tracking the ball and all that always was natural. I was always super calm being back there. And, you know, as a freshman, being on that field, knowing that was my really only shot to kind of play, only shot to kind of touch the ball, I would always tell myself that, look, no matter what, I'm going to try to field the ball and make a play because I ain't getting too many opportunities tonight, right? And so just going out there with that mentality, a lot of people, you know, talk about it still to today. It's like, man, you never used to fair catch. Well, I never was thinking about fair catching.
Right.
Unless it was like a dangerous thing. Really, even then, I have a whole, you know, opinion of fair catching and how you can't really get hurt if you do it a certain way. But with that being said, man, just confidence, man, getting back there, wanting to make a play. I grew up watching Dion and my dad and different people return punts. So I was always in the mentality of I got to make a play and I want to make a play. So, you know, just super confident and just trying to stay relaxed to not be too anxious.
What's that feeling? So, like, when you're punt returning, no one's around you. You're alone. Your first time in the swamp, 90,000, and all of a sudden there's nobody around you, 30 yards closest from you. Do you feel like everyone is staring at me? Like every eye in the entire stadium is looking at me.
I mean,
the stadium gets quiet before a punt. Yeah,
that's like a dream come. The crazy enough, it's a dream come true for me. You know, playing sports, having everybody look at you, everybody being at the game, all those people. Like that's why I fell in love with playing football and playing the sport. To, you know, go out there and entertain and try to show people how good you really are. Right. So my first opportunity back there was kind of like, you know, I would always have these like, man, like, you know, you dream for this. You talked about this. You kind of talked it right up and now you're here. Right. So go out and show, go out and do something. Right. So that was always my thing. And then again, like I said before, I grew up watching Dion. So I would always be back there trying to mimic something he used to do when he was back there as far as getting the crowd hyped or the whole Hogan doing the ear thing or whatever I could do to kind of just get the crowd into the game.
Yeah, just added it up to only 28 fair catches out of 146.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Nuts. Man, absolutely crazy. Nuts. In 2008, you know, in 2006, you had 40 punt returns, only 7 fair catches. 2008, you had 46 punt returns and only 8 fair catches. I don't know if Florida has had 46 punt returns in the last like 5 years. Yeah.
And if they do, they have 40 something fair catches.
Oh, they've probably got 140 fair catches. Brandon, what did you enjoy, punt returning more, kick returning more? I know you're elite at both.
Definitely punt returns for what you guys just – the question you just asked. Yeah. Being back there by yourself, all the pressure being on you, you know, all eyes, everything is, you know, you're the center of attention. So I think I love punt returns more because of that reason.
Is that Tennessee game the one that sticks out the most to you or –
I would say the Tennessee game, but my freshman year, freshman year, because of it, you know, being the coming out party that it kind of was, me not really knowing going into that game how much I was going to play, if I was going to play at all, kind of Coach Meyer, you know, letting Reggie go back first and then putting me out there later in the game and then, you know, getting tripped up almost about to return one and then actually taking one back, even though it didn't count, just being able to make that play and make those plays as a freshman in that game. I would say that was kind of like the biggest thing because, you know, when we got back to campus that Sunday, there was like a big write up in the article about me. So again, that was kind of like, okay, my coming out party, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
Something you said is interesting. When I've been out at practice, spring, fall camp, watching some of the punt returners, I've had that same thought when you just talked about, oh, I played center field. Some of the guys, when they're back there at practice, I'm like, oh, he's never played baseball. Like, he doesn't have, with your feet, with your head up, you don't know where you are, like, spatially around the field. And I've always thought, like, oh, if a guy plays baseball, like, I played outfield growing up, I'm like, oh, that'd be easy. I can move around with my head up. But some guys just look like a fish out of water trying to do it.
For sure. For sure. It definitely helps, man.
So if you had to pick one, would you rather take one to the crib in the swamp, or would you rather silence the crowd, take one to the crib at an away game?
Ah, that's a good one, man.
Right?
That's a good one.
Joy, nah.
It depends. I mean, one place I used to just dream was Death Valley in LSU. So I never, that would probably be a stadium that I wouldn't mind silencing, because they used to talk so much crap. But I'm gonna have to say the swamp, man, because you know, you get in the end zone there, man, you can't hear. You just cannot hear. Yeah. And you know, just being able to get those people standing up, man, that is it's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful feeling.
You're go ahead. What was that? I was just on the LSU note. What was that year? The year they got Tim's phone number.
Yeah.
What was that week like?
I mean, you know, again, any rivalry week, I could tell you a million stories about different things that happened and how crazy it was. But every time playing them, especially going there, was something that happened. Whereas that sophomore year when they had his number and calling them a million times, where it was my senior year and they threw the beer on Herb, like something always happened when we went to Death Valley. And, you know, again, they were a good team that year. I felt like we still should have won the game. Again, highlighting the Swamp Kings thing, like we easily should have beat a team that won the national title. I mean, we had every opportunity to win that game. Leaving the field, we just knew we should have won that game, right? So it was an atmosphere that, you know, we felt like we should have came out on top. But you find out real fast in the SEC, the margin for error. So margin for victory is just, you know, really tough. You got to make every play. Our defense was young at that time. We had a lot of skilled guys that could play offensively, but we're extremely young defensively. And we figured out that year, like, it's going to take way more than just talented players to win in this league.
Yeah, it's incredible to think about the team, the defense that was there in 07. And then in 2008, how much they matured in just that 1 year. I mean, you know, you had Joe Hayden, Marquise Pouncey. You saw Ahmad Black really start to step out, Major Wright, Dustin Doe, Jermaine Cunningham. Like, you can go on and on. Just that leap from, man, this defense is just not very good in 2007, probably cost us a couple games, to holy crap, in 2008, this is an elite defense. It was just such an incredible jump each and every year under Urban Meyer. Missed those
for
days.
Sure. I think that had a lot to do with Spike taking just ownership, though, of the defense. Our sophomore year, we weren't ready to be leaders. We were still young guys that were just trying to mimic what we seen, you know, Moss and Steve and them doing, and knowing that we were good players, but we were worried about partying and just being good and not really worrying about the team. And I think going into that junior year, he took ownership. I took ownership. Percy took ownership. And then again, with us being close to a lot of those sophomores, you know, they did their thing. Obviously, we had senior leadership, Murph, Keystone Moore. There was guys that were in place to help that as well that were older. But again, a lot of the leadership came from our junior class. And, you know, again, I think for his defense, you know, big component of that is Spikes and him just actually taking the leadership role. You know, obviously he was the leader as a sophomore, but he wasn't ready to be that vocal guy that everybody counted on every day in, day out. And I think going into that next year, he was, and that's why the defense played the way it did all year.
Who was on Ox?
Who was on the Ox?
Yeah.
Oh, it would switch up game to game.
Okay.
It would kind of depend on the mood and whatever the vibe was. You know, I've been on the Ox. Major's been on the Ox. Pouncey's been on the Ox. Spikes. Whoever could, you know, whatever the mood was. Everybody, there was never a guy that was on the Ox that was like, oh, you know, take it off. Or
I was just going to ask if we had anybody that said, we're not doing this right now.
It was never that.
That means the Pounceys were the only offensive lineman on the Ox.
For sure. For sure.
For sure. I get it. Yeah.
Especially in those days, for sure.
How crazy
did
was
y'all?
Go ahead, Jordan. No, you got it.
Oh no, I was about to say, did y'all do mat drills when you was there? Y'all did mat drills.
Oh yeah, brother.
I just know y'all was going hard at that because we had some crazy times on them mat drills.
Brandon, let me tell you this. So, good friends with Tate Casey, lives up near you. Your former teammate. I spent 6 years trying to get Tate to tell me about the mat drills. He would never do it. I get an early copy of the Netflix documentary where he is just detailed. Like, he took notes during mat drills, just spilling his guts on Netflix. And I sent him a video. I go, you've got to be kidding me. I've been asking you for years. So Tate finally spilled it to a national audience on Netflix. That's where I had to find out about it.
So, mat drills, man. You know, as a freshman, you go through mat drills. And my dad went to college, right? So I've heard about mat drills, right? And I've heard, how they're just trying to tire you out, how they're trying to do this. College is different, obviously, my experience to his experience, but you hear about something. So you're kind of, aware of what should be going on, right? And so when we go into that room and they got us wrestling and hugging, basically fisticuffs is what I used to call it, until someone taps out. And you find out very fast that this is just a mental mind thing that they're trying to see who can they psych out and who's the craziest. To be honest with you, I used to hate it because it would make me be somebody that I didn't want to be. But, again, my first time wrestling, I had to choke a guy out just to prove a point. I didn't stop when the whistle got blown. And, because obviously I'm smaller, guys just thinking, oh, it's sweet when we go against him. You know what I mean? So I would prove a point and just go excessively through the whistle just so they would leave me the hell alone.
That's it. Brandon James, you think it's sweet?
Come on. For sure.
Were you in the weight room when Omar Hines bust a muscle in his leg?
No, but funny story. He was younger, so he lifted at a different time. So obviously, I hear about it. I'm in class or whatever I'm doing on campus. And by the time I get to the facility, we would always give the strength coaches a hard time. We would always tell them they're trying to kill us. They're going to kill somebody one day. Someone is actually going to die. Da, 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 da. We would always mess with them about this stuff, right? And so when things like that happen, we're like, I told you, man, y'all going to kill somebody. They're going to sue your ass. You know what I mean? So it was a real funny thing. We just gave them a hard time, man. Like, y'all going to actually kill somebody, man. They're going to sue y'all ass, man. So it was always funny, man. But he ended up being okay, so it wasn't funny. But it was just, I remember the story, and we would always say those type of things. Like, man, this stuff can't be legal they're doing to us.
Yeah.
Brandon, talk to us a little bit about what you're up to now. You're the offense coordinator back at your alma mater.
Yes, sir. So I'm a teacher. And again, really my job, I would say, is being the offensive coordinator. But I'm an ESC support facilitating teacher at St. Augustine. Been coordinating now for five, six years. We've had a lot of success. We're on a good run right now. We're actually in the bye week right now. We're 6-0 sitting currently. But it's been good, man. It's been crazy to know that, I would fall in love with coaching just as much as I would love playing. But it's been something that I've enjoyed. To find a passion that, you wake up every day just loving to do, and just being able to push kids and develop kids where I'm from. It's been something that I love doing. So, it's been fun, man, and just steady going, man. Just trying to keep going.
You should email Billy some plays. Now, real quick.
There you go, man. There you go.
What do you think about the current team, man, the state of the team? Man, we had some expectations this year, but I don't think we're living up to it just yet. But what do you think about the current team and what's going on?
I mean, I think I feel like the rest of the Gator Nation is extremely embarrassing. I think everybody had high expectations going into this year. I was talking a lot of trash. And it's getting thrown in my face right now by all my buddies that like Miami and Florida State and all these other people. But I think the most frustrating part is that, you look at what our defense has been doing, and they've had us in every game and, the chances to win every game just off of their play, right? And I think we're not helping them at all. And to see, obviously since the Spurrier days, it's been offense, offense, offense for University of Florida than what we were able to do when we were there. And told to see us so, not being able to make plays, no big plays, no stretching the field. I can't even tell you how many explosives I've seen watching the game, right? Just explosive plays, 25 plus yards. Like, you don't see a lot of it, right? And so, again, like you said, as offensive coordinator, it's extremely embarrassing being having to watch it. But, you know, being a Gator, you know, you want what's best for the, you know, the program. And so you're extremely optimistic. I think we have the guys there. I hope Dallas coming back this week helps. But I also think, you know, putting those guys in position will help as well. So, you know, I'm a big Billy Napier fan. Every time I met him, he's, you know, he's done really well with, you know, loving the alumni coming back and, you know, doing his best to make himself a part of Gator Nation. But at the same time, you know, results are everything. And we are starving to be back in the thick of things in the SEC and to feel like year after year, it was just keep getting further and further away from us.
It dawned on me last Saturday was 17 years since the promise, which means 17 years since a national championship, but 17 years since Florida's last SEC championship. That's how long it's been.
For sure.
I mean, your players don't remember.
No.
They have before Swamp Kings have no idea that Florida was a monster.
All the guys that I coach think Florida sucks and they don't know anything about us being good, right? And I think the most, for me, the part that's extremely like, man, is defeating is because, like, no knock on Billy Napier. We have him now, but like, we had Coach Mullen, and I don't think, you know, nothing, if anything, things haven't gotten better, you know what I mean? So we jump to conclusion to make these decisions. And things don't get better. And you throw away a coach like that, that was just so clear cut, you know, just offensive genius. You know what I mean? Let's just say what it is. He was proven. And, you know, you throw him away. And again, you know, you love Billy Napier. You're extremely optimistic about the hire. But then we're at this point. It's like, well, whoa, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, so It's just tough, man. He did take us to the SEC title game. We were in the thick of the SEC while he was there. And then since that time, we've not been in that conversation, right? Mm-hmm. So it's tough, you know. Even though you can root for someone, you gotta hold them accountable. And I think the wins and losses, you know, it speaks for itself.
Yeah. All right, guys. Any more questions for 2-5?
Nah, man. Thanks for pulling up, bro. You're a legend. Glad you could spend some time with us in your bye week, my brother.
I just got to ask, Dan, man, you say you had the spinal meningitis. Are you short like me, brother?
No. Just a hair under 6 feet. It's the mental part that got me.
Yeah, my grandmother said
no, it was, you know, obviously, I think I was like 6 months old or so. I know it wasn't the prognosis wasn't good.
Gotcha.
You know, so, yeah. And I didn't know. I just thought you were a short king. You know what I mean? Yeah, reading that article, man, it's scary, right? You know, and I don't talk much about it, right? Like, it's not like something you remember as a 6-month-old or 5-month-old. You know, seeing that, man, I'm glad that you've made obviously the most of everything, and you know.
No, I appreciate you, man. Again, yeah. I just wanted to mess with you about it, but thank y'all, man. Thank you for having me on, man. Appreciate y'all.
There might be a correlation because Dan was an All-American intramural flag football safety while at UF.
Yeah, so. I was. I was the white Reggie Nelson of intramural orange league.
Dan covered the 3% of the earth that Reggie didn't.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. I didn't have the dreads though. There was no confusion about who was playing, but athletically, very similar.
Similar. Gotcha. Appreciate you.
All right, man.
I appreciate you, man.
Brandon.
Best of luck, man.
All right.
Awesome, brother. See ya. Brandon James. Great interview.
Yeah, man, that was fun.
Now he's the hard part. I went and looked it up. I thought he must have had just some like great returns. He only had the one punt return versus Tennessee. And then when I was going back through it, poor Hawaii. Hawaii caught two in the same game.
Yeah, I remember that game. The Tennessee game.
They deserved it.
Yeah, coming all the way here. They didn't give us the return trip back for the boys. No, Tennessee, he had the touchdown, but I think he also had a ton of yards that game.
Yeah.
And he flipped it. It was like the first drive that he had the punt return in that Tennessee game. Mm. Yeah. Rest in peace, Colt Brennan. That's right.
Colt Brennan's dead?
Yeah.
When did Kobe Bryant die?
When did that happen?
A couple years ago.
What happened? You didn't know he was dead.
No, I for sure did. I for sure knew that he passed away.
Let's make sure he's dead, man, before we just put him in the grave.
Yeah, no, he's definitely yeah? passed away. Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
He died in 2021.
Yeah, he had a
kid pandemic time
in a hotel room after ingesting fentanyl. Don't do that. Don't.
Yeah, he got lost in the pandemic wash. A lot of people died that I found out later.
Yeah, but he had
rest in peace, man.
Alcohol, methamphetamines, amphetamines, and fentanyl.
Yeah, this is a drug overdose.
Don't do those things.
This is a drug overdose. Nothing to do with the pandemic. That's just a drug overdose.
Well, no, but he died in the pandemic. Hmm.
Yeah.
If he had COVID, they probably said he had COVID. Anyway, let's get a quick home field apparel. Go visit homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code Stadium and Gale. A lot of great products there. Nick has the corduroy hat. They just dropped a few more corduroy hats for this season, so go check them out. Great products, great designs, really soft fabric. You'll wear them anywhere and everywhere you go. People will be impressed. They see a lot of fans wearing them at Gator games, so go check them out. Homefieldapparel.com, promo code Stadium and Gale. And if they don't have what you're looking for, go visit alumnihall.com or go visit them in Gainesville on Archer Road, right past the Chick-fil-A there. Anything that you want, t-shirts, visors, hoodies, hats, golf balls, gifts for the holiday season, whatever it might be, go visit Alumni Hall or go visit them at alumnihall.com. All right, guys. So game preview or game review. We'll do the game preview on Friday during game day eve. Week off, Nick.
Dominant victory over bye.
Surprising victory over bye. But incredible week to not have a football game.
Great football.
Thursday. I started Friday. Virginia won, and then
Houston. What a game!
If you stayed up late, I was up pretty late on Friday night. Just at the house watching the Houston Oregon State game. That was a heck of a game. If you watch that one, and then
trying to stay up for that one, and then I seen Armstrong defense start giving up points, and I didn't have no narrative.
It wasn't pretty. They clamped them down in the fourth, and then in overtime there.
I couldn't complain like I wanted to about Armstrong not being here, so I went to bed, man.
But obviously, you had the Georgia Alabama game. You had a lot of great football on Saturday, so hopefully everybody got to enjoy it.
Yeah, Saturday was an elite day.
Friday was an elite day, too.
Oh, man, Friday,
bro, I was just sitting, Jordan, you were teammates with Jake McGee, weren't you?
Bro, yeah, man, Jake is.
I was just sitting there. Jake McGee was a Midtown legend, let me tell you.
Yes.
I was just sitting there giggling to myself. I tweeted one picture, I think at like the beginning. It was 7-0. I was like, oh, Jake McGee went to both schools. Tweeted a picture of him. And I go to his Twitter account, and I start going through. I'm like, oh, there's a bunch of pictures. So anytime something good happened for Virginia, just another Jake McGee pick. Jake McGee, you're like this. Jake McGee transferred before the portal. So he graduated Virginia, and the only way back then you could transfer and play right away is if you graduated and you were in a major that the school you were leaving didn't have, a graduate degree.
Call those the good old days.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So Jake shows up, and they make him available to the media right away. We're talking to him. This is all on the record, and we're like, all right, well, what are you getting your master's in? And Jake goes, oh, I don't know. We're all looking at each other, and we're like, hey, buddy, lie to us. Just make something up. You just told us I didn't come here to play master's degree. Came here to play football. This is back when the NCAA could actually wield some power. But Jake,
one thing I did from the week, bro, is just it's apparent. I thought it was very apparent how like we're behind on offense. Like it's so much good offense in college football. Like every game I'm watching, even the Virginia Florida State game, that turns into like a barn burner shootout. And I'm just watching these defenses and just schematically what they're doing. It's like, bro, we're so far behind offensively. I don't know, like, how we get on the right track, but it's an offensive generation right now. You got to have an offense. You got to be able to get points to win football games. I'm glad that we had a defense. If our offense had any signs of life, we'd be a problem for a lot of teams, man. So,
yeah. I mean, you saw Lane Kiffin with a backup quarterback, man, from Ferris State, of all places, Trinidad Chambliss.
I looked him up a little bit. I don't know how he got overlooked, but won a national championship and whatever the D2 Heisman is, won that last year.
Yeah.
But wildly, wildly impressive.
Yeah, quarterback. Yeah,
you go into this year with, like, designing the offense around Austin Simmons,
right? And 375 yards passing or something.
Yeah,
ballpark. If he keeps on this route, he's going to be in Heisman talks, bro. But it's just impressive. Like, the overall job for the head coach is to have that room ready by all means necessary. That's just a good eval and fine to have a kid like that they went to, and he's probably better than Austin Simmons. So, yeah, that's what it's got to be in the SEC, because attrition is going to happen. You're going to lose guys. And that next guy, you don't want the drop off to be as big. But anywho, good football. I thought the Bama, that Bama game versus Georgia, that screen pass to the offensive lineman, ingenuity, man, was on display all weekend. Just the fourth down play from Lane Kiffin that he called, it was just a show of just offensive play calling gurus, guys letting their.
Do you see the Eagles check out of their tush? Run a handoff instead. Now you can't do anything. Now there's no way you can stop the tush push.
For real.
But yeah, so you know, obviously a great weekend. Vanderbilt 5-0. Mississippi State almost beats Tennessee.
Vanderbilt 5-0. Diego Pavia going to try. David's going to try to slay Goliath 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
This week? I think game day's there, huh?
They are. Yeah, they chose that over FSU and in Miami. So the SEC Nation will be in Gainesville. I think EA Sports said that they'll be in Gainesville too. So if you're a student with activities Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
What? Do they have to? They don't have to.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, but – Timmy will be
here. That means Tim will be on the sideline.
Tim don't be rocking with us like that, man, for these games. Tim gonna tell the truth. Texas. Give me
Tim
Texas.
He's gonna shake his head. He's just gonna watch whatever's going on.
No, we're gonna talk about the Texas game on Friday, man.
But Nick, talk to us. I want to get into Billy Napier's press conference a little bit today of what he said, because we have to. But you've been watching some practice. Coaches didn't go out recruiting this week. A bit of a kerfuffle on the timeline. Maybe not kerfuffle, a bit of bamboozlement on the timeline, seeing that the staff wasn't out recruiting. Billy Napier said today that they, you know, based on the schedule, based on when teams were home, they just didn't feel like they needed to go recruiting this week. But, yeah, talk to us a little bit about the last, I don't know, 2 weeks, week and a half, I guess full week.
So he is telling the truth. I've always said this, like, Billy's not going to lie to you. Like, Dan, stand up on the podium.
He is a liar. There's Dan multiple Mullen? Things that he's lied about. Oh, no, Billy Napier.
Oh.
Like when he said that the reason he's in this position is because he's been a good offensive coordinator. And I'm like, God, the reason we are in this position is because you're the offensive coordinator. Anyway, go ahead, Nick. Sorry.
They do schedule out the recruiting stuff like well in advance. It's not like you're doing it on Sunday after the Miami game, being like, this is where you're going out. They have another bye week. Maybe they'll go out on the next bye week. I don't know. It feels like we're exactly where we were in terms of a fan base and the way the fan base feels, the perception of the program. In a lot of regards, the reality of where the program is, the same spot we were last year after four games. And it sucks. I feel it. I feel it for the fans. I work for a company that, regardless of who the coach is going to try to raise money for the players and try to give whoever the coach is as much money to work with as possible for NIL. So it's like, I know people have been frustrated with me, like not participating and bashing the coaching staff. I just think it's a bad look based on my new job. Yeah, but I feel like there was a little bit of excitement at the end of last year and a lot of hope with DJ, and then DJ's hurt and you kind of like lose that momentum in the spring. He has that weird freak injury before fall, and then you don't get any of like the momentum that you built. It just like didn't carry through the off season, and then you start the season the way you have, 1-3. And I feel like we are exactly where we were a year ago, if not even angrier. And I totally understand.
I think the fan base is completely lost at this point. I don't think there's anything you can do. I think it's now just waiting for that Pete Thamel tweet, whether it's on Sunday or the following Sunday or whenever it might be. We've seen the dominoes start to fall around college football. Sam Pittman gets fired now. That's a strategic firing based on his record. You've seen Mike Gundy get fired, and you've seen UCLA.
Hold on, let's go back to that. What a ridiculous sport college football is. Pitino was the head coach at Arkansas and was fired after a motorcycle accident revealed he was having an affair with a subordinate on his football staff.
Right.
And here we are 12 years later, and that is now the interim head coach at the very same school. Like, what a
time heals.
The simulation is broken.
That brother deserves a redemption story. I thought when I saw that news,
I immediately like shot back to him having to do the press conference
with the neck brace and with the rash
with the neck brace. And I'm like, that,
one of the funny things is we had Lamar Thomas on the old roll up show. He was a wide receiver coach for Pitino at that time. He said, what was funny is the ringtone he had for Pitino was a motorcycle. So whenever Pitino would call him, it was because he always was on his motorcycle. So he just made it a motorcycle. So he said after the accident, they report to practice, and they're trying to figure out the next move. There's a lot of drama going on. And he said Pitino called him, and then the motorcycle just started going off, and everybody in the room started laughing. I do like the buyout from Arkansas. Yeah, there's a lot of hammers coming down. It's interim season. Like, people are getting fired for the lack of performing. And I know a lot of Gator fans, we're all just waiting on when it's going to happen for Florida. I don't think there – I'm with Dan. I don't think there's a road to good fan PR or, what do they call it in politics? Approval rating? I don't think there's a way to improve the approval rating amongst the fans. So it's just a matter. We've been through this, man. Even with the coaching talk, like everything is like all deja vu. Mm-hmm. Whatever we're calling the coach to the carpet for at that time when things are rough, whether it's recruiting with Dan Mullen, they just have these moments where they say certain things. Mm-hmm. And I thought today when he said the quote he put out, I thought that was just one of those moments of, stubbornness. Like we've seen in the past, lack of awareness, and like in any endeavor, you just can't, as a leader, get caught up in whatever is the same. Like,
drinking your own Kool-Aid.
Yeah, you gotta get to the results and get to success, and sometimes that takes delegating and diminishing your role for the overall betterment of the players, the team, the program, etc. I just don't think that's, I think it was a missed opportunity for Billy in this whole process, is to take a step back, bring in somebody that could call plays and he could get his hands on the total program, and maybe we could get 11 players on special teams.
Yeah, I think you have to do something if you really want to win over the fans, and I don't see that happening. So I think that the bet is made. It's just a matter of when he gets in, right? So.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We're not going to spend this whole episode kind of beating the same horse. I mean, I think everybody knows where everybody except for Nick knows where everybody stands on this matter. And we understand.
I do have a question, though. Do we play in Orlando the next two seasons after this season?
In Orlando?
No. Oh, you mean like when they're doing, if they do the stadium renovations in the Swamp?
Yeah.
I don't know. So they're still in the fund, very preliminary stuff with that. I don't know where. It's super tricky. I think like when Texas A&M did their big renovations, it took them like 3 years and they would do a phase, a chunk that they could get done from like November, last week of November until first week of August or last week of August, whenever it started. So they would do a chunk and they did like phases of it. It caused for a ridiculous looking spring game when they only had like 50 yards of field to work with because someone was like a construction site. But I don't think it would be very surprising to me if they if they lost home games to a renovation. I don't think that would be the case.
That's what I was thinking. Like, I can't even imagine a new head coach hire with him either with half of a stadium or playing in Orlando.
Yeah, no, I've not heard of them playing in Orlando. And I don't know if they could afford to lose those home games revenue wise.
And I don't know. What a dump.
Yeah, I don't.
But that place is the slum.
Camping World.
I don't ever want to go back there. Oh my God. The projects, brother.
What is this? It's in the projects, and the stadium is the projects.
Right. So I don't know what the case is, but I know if we not playing in the Swamp, I cannot imagine they would hire a new coach on that. So,
Listen, my brother in Christ, I don't care if we're playing at Lake Lotta Park or
I'm just saying that's not a good
field. I need a new coach, brother.
Your first job, you don't have the power of the Swamp behind you. I feel like he might mess around and just hang around just off the strength of that.
I've not heard anything about Florida playing in Orlando from anybody that I've talked to.
Let me ask this before we get out here. Like, Dan, do you foresee any possible way? Say we win six wins. I don't even think we get six, but I don't think we get six, brother. I'm a very positive guy, bro.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, it'll be a fight to six for sure.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think that that's enough. I think that you have lost a lot of people. I think you've lost a lot of, you know, obviously message boards and social media are going to be a little bit more bombastic than most in terms of what they say and how much they care and everything else. I think you run the risk of apathy, of donations, of people being interested in the product. I think you run a risk of recruiting, you know, issues and what do you do then? I think that you've just, it's not working, and I'll give Billy Napier credit. Like, he drove the ship into the iceberg and he's going to stay at the helm until it's over. Right. So I'll give him credit for, you know, thinking that, you know, he's the reason, you know, that Florida is going to be successful as him as an offensive coordinator. I don't see it. I don't think the buyout's an issue. I think, you know, your options, that's the question that I have, right? Like, what if Florida does go 2-10, 3-9, does that potentially change what your board could look like of somebody leaving a job to come to Florida? And I'm not talking about a John Summerall or somebody like that. You know, would a coach like Lane Kiffin, would a coach, you know, like a Kurt Cignetti, or I'm just naming some of the bigger names that are out there, would they leave the program they're at for a 3-9 team? Yes, it's Florida, but, you know, what does that do for your image as a program? And those are questions that I think about. You're on mute, Corey.
My bad. Amateur hour over here. I think guys like Kirk Cignetti going to be out just from a buyout standpoint. I do just think style. Well, I like him as a coach. Like, I think he's good for Indiana. We was talking about this on the space today, this morning. I think he's good for Indiana, but I don't think, like, we got to get back to getting guys that fit Florida's culture.
Yeah.
So I do think some of these guys are just going to be just not good fits, and also their buyouts is going to be too high to make sense, especially what we spending on the buyout. We're getting Billy out of here. But I think some guys like Lashley, you know, some lower level guys that are like small ACC schools that fit stylistically what we want to do. But I think the best thing Florida could do is get a guy that fit the offensive culture of what was successful here, and youth, can recruit, flip a roster fast, identify talent, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to be inheriting a lot of talent. Like, I don't think the roster is going to deplete like a lot of people think it's going to deplete. I think certain guys are going to have to stay because of certain business deals. A lot of these guys, NIL, the guys that got the high-level NIL deals, is predicated on them being at University of Florida. I don't think those deals just carry over from year to year for no reason. So I think a lot of business is going to keep some of the bigger pieces together. But to be able to flip a roster, it's not 2008 anymore. It's 2025. Yeah. You can flip a roster pretty fast. But I think there's some good – I like Rhett Lashley. I like Lane, but I don't know how serious that is. If people really like Lane with some of the shenanigans he brings, but I like him. Yeah. But whenever I like a guy and it makes sense for Florida, Florida has never made that hire. So I'm just not going to expect it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, does Florida go big game hunting or do they go for a smaller? You know, I don't know. Rhett Lashley, I know that he's kind of connected to this Arkansas job, but SMU is one of the richest programs in college football. Are they going to be willing to lose him?
Does he want to win?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they were a game away from the playoffs last year. Did they make the playoffs?
Yeah, but SMU, you're not winning Natty at SMU.
No.
SMU might they might change things. Like their boosters literally told the school. Yeah. Their boosters literally told the school, get to the ACC. I don't care that they're not going to give you any TV money for 4 years. We will write a check to cover that, and then we will write a check for NIL. Like SMU was doing dirt before dirt was even dirt.
That's cute and cool. They're not even going to win the ACC, let alone the national championship.
Like, SMU's got money.
I mean, a lot of schools in Texas got money, right? Yeah. I think, like, most programs in Texas, they got a ton of bread. It's oil money galore. Like, high school programs out there got money. At the end of the day, these guys have egos, and they want to win. They want to be great. They want to be legends.
Yeah.
He is never going to win a national championship, right? Rhett Lashley is competitive. The SMU move, I think he could possibly be there for a little bit, but he know if he want to win, the likelihood of you winning at SMU or even Arkansas is very slim. Programs like Florida, you know, that have been there in the last two decades and have that type of pool recruits, the home recruiting that they can be able to pull, having a guy like DJ Lagway and some of these five stars on the roster, it makes more sense to be able to put pieces together to go make a run. He's never going to make a run at SMU. He could be rich and then, you know, comfortable. I'm pretty sure he's like that right now. But if you want to go win it all, you're going to have to go step into on a big boy campus somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly different levels. SMU will never be outbid financially, right? I mean, they are very well stacked right in the heart of Dallas. I don't think that Florida is going to go toe for toe, and I don't think that they should go toe for dollar over Rhett Lashley, right? So, you know, I start to think of coaches that are out there. You know, there's a lot of coaches right now that are at their alma maters that, you know, Florida could potentially target. Brent Keyes at his alma mater, Kenny Dillingham at his alma mater, Clark Lee at
his alma mater. I like Brent, but not style fit. We got to get a style fit. I like where you're going. I don't want to cut you off no more, but
yeah.
Brent Key is cool at his alumni. I think I like him there. I don't think he fits us.
Yeah, no, I'm going through the names, right? Because if Florida, you don't want to go for that G5 coach again, right? I think Florida finds itself in a precarious situation. Ever since Urban Meyer, they've hired a defensive coordinator, a coach from Colorado State. Then you had Dan Mullen in there, and then you have Billy Napier from Louisiana, where he was at for 3 years. Most people, unless they followed college football, had no idea who Billy Napier was. Now, to credit Will Muschamp and Billy Napier, they were both highly sought after coaches, right? Billy Napier turned down the Tennessee job, turned down the South Carolina job. So in essence, you thought it was going to work. I don't think from an optics perspective, you can hire somebody that fans just don't know the name of. I think you're, and if they do, they're going to have a really, really hard time selling that to the average fan.
All right. Taylor Swift on the list.
There you go. Yeah.
Might sell out.
Steve Spurrier Jr.
Right.
I don't know, and I don't think we're going to go after Jed Fish, and I don't think that Florida's going to pay $10 million to buy him out of his contract. And if they do, then, I mean, you guys can carry on the show without me. Jordan, you're the new host.
If that happens, Dan will be gone fishing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, right? Like, are these coaches worth the buyout too, right? Because you're not just buying out Billy Napier. You're going to buy out the staff. Shout out to Todd Grantham, by the way.
Oh, ski mask Hall of Fame.
He just got paid out $4 million for coaching four games. Nuts.
College coaching ski is a Ponzi scheme, Hall of Fame. Bro. Like, it has to, right? I think they've like somebody said this in my mention. Like Sexton is low key created a coaches union just by having all of them on his roster. Yeah. Like these contracts and whatnot, the way they're shaped is. It's a win-win situation. Like you get a bonus for stinking. Like think about it. If I'm Grantham, I just coached four games and you give me $4 million. Like what are we talking about, bro? I'm not sad. I'm okay. Like I'm calling college hunks with a smile to come package up my house and put everything in a box, bro.
You know what we're talking about? We're talking about the south of France in the fall.
Yes.
Talking about Monaco.
It's not a bad day for a coach to get fired. But you got to – I like what Arkansas had with Sam Pittman. I don't know if they got to exercise it, but they had a clause in there. If he's under 500, that buyout drops and dips a little bit.
It's like $3 million. I mean, it's a significant amount. You know, sure. But, Corey, I think you make a really good point. You know, you saw it with FSU with Mike Norvell. All Jimmy Sexton has to do is float somebody's name out there. It doesn't have to be true or not. And what happened? They signed him to a deal that they can't do anything about. He's got a 60-something million dollar buyout right now. Mm-hmm. And it's all guaranteed. Like,
it's crazy.
Yeah. I just think it's got to change at some point. I don't know how it does. I don't know when it does. But, you know, you've got to think it's got to change.
Yeah, there's no incentive to do well. Like, these coaches are going to stay stubborn and not change certain things because what are you going to do? I'm going to get a bonus if you fire me. It's almost more advantageous to leave than fix the problem that you have. And that's why I felt like that, like about a lot of coaches, like they get stubborn because, you know, I'd rather blow up, go start over somewhere else. I get my buyout here. I go sit on TV a couple years, you know, doubling up on my bread while I'm getting some media bread on Fox. You know, CBS, I'm also getting my buyout check.
Yeah.
There's no incentive to be great, bro. Like, or to fix things like it was when we were kids, bro. Like watching this game, it's just a totally different coaching world.
Yeah. You know, and I just don't know how it changes. I'm going to pull this up from Real. It says UF isn't the job it once was. I think we need to accept it. And I think I wholeheartedly disagree. With Florida's obviously not had the success that they've wanted over the last 17 years.
That's the real Strickland.
I've got a comment on that too, but I think the Florida job is still an elite job. And I think everybody that is in the know says that Florida is an elite job. I think from a support perspective, like I think that there's a lot of reason to be frustrated with Scott Strickland on things. But he gave Billy Napier more money than he's given anybody, right? And you can disagree that that was on the wrong person. You should have done it before with other coach, whatever. Like waters under the bridge. The
support is crazy.
Yeah. The amount of support staff, you have an indoor facility, you have everything that everybody else has now. You also have a very fertile recruiting ground. You have great brand recognition. You have a huge name. You're Jordan and Nike. You have money. You have great, you know, money with Florida Victorious and everything else. I disagree wholeheartedly that Florida's not the job that it once was. Florida hasn't had the success, but I still think that Florida is a top 10 job in college football.
100%. I'm with you. For everything you said, the recruiting grounds is also like you're in the state of Florida and you got the best talent in the country. If not, you know, top three. But the resources that they gave – Nick bring that up all the time. Like some of the coaches, when they found out the size of the staff and the things that Billy Napier were getting, A lot of these coaching staff don't have the type of support. Is this the greatest situation from an administrative standpoint? And, you know, our leadership is a little shaky. Yeah, the times where it isn't the greatest time to be a Gator football coach because of the instability at the top and, you know, the seeming of lack of leadership at the top. Yeah, it may not be, you know, for some coaches that are in a stable situation leadership-wise and there's more direction, they may not want to step into shaky situations. So I would say from that, just that may make it less desirable for, like, certain guys, but the job is still the job. These big three jobs in the state of Florida, yeah, like, Florida State was able to snag Willie Taggart from Oregon because this is the state of Florida. The big three programs are the big three programs. Mario Cristobal, same thing, them snatching him from Oregon to come down to Miami. Like, we can go poach a coach, but I don't know if our situation is in the right place. And also, Florida hasn't been aggressive. Like, I think the people in charge haven't treated it like the job it is, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I think. I think we settle. We don't go make the splash hire. Like, this is a splash program. We should go make the splash hire. We should have to Google Jim McElwain when the University of Florida is making a hire. We should have to Google Billy Napier when we're making a hire. The fans should know. The casual fans should know who the coach is when you're hiring a coach at the University of Florida. I just don't think they've been treating it like that way in the hiring process. And that's where the standard began.
Yeah,
in the hiring process.
Maybe he wants to seem like that guy and that he found a hidden gem. You know what I'm saying? He don't want to go too commercial with it. I mean, I'm just trying to guess at this rate.
Bro, Jordan's over here being like, Scott Strickland's not trying to make number one pop charts.
Bro, they hire.
But it just worked. For like, on the flip side, it literally just worked as well as it could with Todd Golden. You just took a young dude, from San Francisco in a national championship. Like, it just worked.
Everybody
Urban Meyer was like
for that.
Urban Meyer was like a hot name. Jeremy Foley deserves credit for that. Like, everyone says it was Bernie Macho.
Jeremy Foley was very involved in that.
But like Billy Donovan, young kid, it worked. Like, there's a pattern of it. So like I get what you're saying. And I've said this multiple times. The University of Florida is not a place you come to learn how to be a head coach.
Right.
I mean, times change, right? It's like, that was cool then. But now you see the big boy programs aren't finding these G5 guys to be, you know, over and over again. Like, we're just getting to another thing, too. Like, stylistically, we got to be University of Florida. Like, we've been trying to be Bama. Like, stop hiring Nick Saban's assistants, man. Like, we need to find a coach that makes us look like Florida. Muschamp, cool. I like Muschamp when he was here, but defensive guy, mentality-wise, you know, we was trying to find that Saban sauce. Jim McElwain. Like, we're not even getting a good Bama assistant. Yeah. Like, we're getting
we got the worst one of the crop, maybe Mel Tucker, but other than that.
Yeah, Mel Tucker's probably the go-to the worst ones, man. But anyway, we just got to get back to I'm just regurgitating the same old stuff.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. I don't think, you know, there is – we don't mention him on the show. He thinks that, you know, Scott Strickland is sabotaging Florida football. I don't buy into the premise that a coach can't be successful at UF with Scott Strickland as head coach. I think it's been frustrating, certainly, that Florida hasn't had success, but I don't think it's Scott Strickland standing in the way of their success. Maybe hiring the wrong person, but you have a brand new indoor facility. You have a brand new football only facility. You're making a ton of renovations to the Swamp, including everything that's, you know, for the players. You've had the largest staff you've ever had. You've now embraced, yes, it took a little bit of time. You've fully embraced Florida Victorious. Like, everything is there to be successful as a head coach. You just have the wrong stubborn guy in the role.
Yeah. You got to unfollow some of those accounts, but like the commitment that Scott Strickland made to Billy Napier and to this staff, super attractive.
Yeah.
Super attractive. I think, and I'm probably biased, I think the University of Florida football coach is the best coaching job in the state. I think FSU is probably behind that. Miami, just because it's a private school, small. Yeah. You've got an hour drive from your campus, small donor base,
20-yard like, practice field.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Miami's a tougher job win at than both the other schools given today's climate. But like, I don't buy into the premise that this is that Florida's fallen off to the point where it's not a good and attractive job. It's an elite job.
Yeah, I mean, four of the top 10 NFL-producing cities are in Florida, right? Jacksonville, Tampa, Fort Lauderdale, and Miami. Not in
that. Hold on, Dan. Take a moment for everyone that says you hate Jacksonville.
I just gave a huge shout-out to Jack. Shout out to Jacksonville.
Oh, accident. I don't think he tried. He didn't try.
He led the list off with.
I did. They were not number one on the list of Florida, but when you have nothing else to do, you get the chance to play in the NFL. I do want to discuss.
Moncrief is getting to them DMs, huh? They threats is hitting.
I just survived that. I can survive Moncrief. All right. We didn't talk about it. We kind of talked a little bit about it, but the schedule got released for 2026 through 2029. And they kind of did what I kind of mentioned on the show. I think we all agreed that it would be cool to not play the same teams 1 year and then just reverse the schedule like they did. And I think Nick was like, oh, wow, the SEC scheduling office would have to do extra work. They won't do that. Well, like surprising to everybody, they did. They did like an ABAB situation. So 2026 Florida, and I think the schedule actually like works out nice compared to what it's been in the past. 2026 home is South Carolina, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma. I think that's Oklahoma's first time visiting the Swamp, if I remember correctly. Away, you have Kentucky, Auburn, finally playing Auburn again, Missouri and Texas, and then obviously the neutral site game against Georgia. The year after that, just remember that for the back of your mind so I don't have to read it again on 28 and 29. Home is Kentucky, Arkansas, LSU, Texas A&M. Away, South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi State, Tennessee. So, I mean, they didn't do a full-on sweep now that I realize that I just read it off. But, I mean, you finally have some different teams on there that you haven't played in a little while. Maybe a little bit of an easier schedule.
Definitely an easier schedule. Right. I use an easier schedule.
Thank you, Nick.
Been rough.
Bye-bye.
At least if we have a new coach, it'll put him in a good position.
Yeah.
What I love – at Auburn next year. Florida has not played. It used to be an annual rivalry. Florida has not played on the plane since 2011.
Has it really been that long? Wow.
2011 was the last time Florida went to Auburn, despite this being Florida's third trip to Texas A&M, to College Station. Third time since 2012. This will be the first time Florida plays Auburn, an actual rival in the history of the football program.
Yeah, no, EA Sports still has it as a rivalry. Was the last time we played Auburn the LaMichael Pirine run?
Yes.
In 2019?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's been 19, yeah.
So it'll have been 7 years since you played Auburn, so you get the chance to play Oklahoma finally. So looking forward to that schedule. You know, always like to see some new teams, you know, go into the Swamp, but I don't think any of those years – now, you can't prognosticate too much in the future. You don't know where these teams are going to be. But the schedule does look, you know, slightly more digestible when you look at it this way.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed out about not having Tennessee, not having that game every year. I do like the – it was always going to have to be nine games. I do like that you will get to – if you stay at Florida for 4 years, if you stay at any of these schools for 4 years – you will get to play
everybody.
The whole conference.
Yeah.
You get to play everybody.
That is cool. I mean, so yeah, make it to Gainesville if you want at the end of November, the last time Tennessee will be in the Swamp until 2029, which is just kind of hard to believe. But well, I think that's going to wrap up our show tonight. We do have game day Eve on Friday, so make sure that you are doing that. Nick, I know you'll be at the game. Jordan, Corey, you guys going to be at the game this weekend or no?
No, I got to work Saturday, man. Be at the Miami Northwestern, Miami Central game doing a game day live.
Oh, that's right. Saturday? I saw that.
Yeah, they're playing Saturday. Trash Power Stadium, Adidas Field. We're gonna be doing a lot of content coming out from that rivalry and a lot of more rivalries from that Super 7 down in Miami. We ended up landing the Miami-Dade Super 7 we're in charge of all the media and content of just all sports and media in Dade County. So a lot of my Saturdays aren't going to be the same. So I'm going to be down in Miami quite a bit. So I can't make it, man. What's up?
It's a really cool opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm excited. It's busy. I got a lot of work to do, but I'm super excited about it. So I can't make it up, man. Games at the same time. I'm not even be able to watch the game, you know, at 4 o'clock.
We'll right. hold it down for you. If you're in Gainesville, I'll be up there with Sarah, hopefully run into you, Nick. And if you see me in the bathroom, just wait outside of the bathroom to say hello.
Remember, Dan is very quick, very busy. The only time you really get him standing still is in the bathroom. Use that as your opportunity to introduce yourself. Tell him at length how much you enjoy him on the podcast.
I did see somebody in – I think it was a bachelor party. We didn't get to talk. I was sitting at a table at a restaurant outside, and they walked by, gave him a Go Gator. They didn't recognize me or whatever. That's how I'm getting at. But it was cool to see a bachelor party with three dudes wearing Florida Gator stuff in Medellin while I was there. Probably the only English I heard spoke as well. One final ad read, Jordan. You're going to have Song of the Week, so think about that. If you are looking for a really cool cup that keeps your hot drinks hot, cold drinks cold, my ice is still in there from a few hours ago. Go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. Use promo code STADIUM15. You get 15% off of your order. Go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. Promo code STADIUM15. You get 15% off of your order. Also, I got this hat. I bought it from Branded Bills. Ooh, if you guys are looking for a discount code, they're not sponsoring the show. Just letting you guys know that they do have a promo code for listeners of this show. You do have to use the link that's on our Twitter page in order for you to get that discount. The promo code is STADIUM15, or it's just STADIUM. So go visit our website, click that link, use the promo code if you want a cool hat. Branded Bills has great products. So, Jordan, what do you got? Song of the Week, my friend.
I'm going off of Young Thug's new album that just released maybe a couple of days ago now. The song
What?
Sorry, go ahead.
He's not in jail. No, he's not. He's out of jail. He beat the charges.
Yep, beat the charges. Beat the RICO, whatever you want.
Chin up, twin.
Beat the RICO is crazy.
It ain't actually beat it. It was a draw.
Yeah.
That's beating it. Yeah. Is he in prison?
No, he went higher. That's like defense attorneys in America, and they just went after him.
But the song is called
"How You Look at Dogs."
My dogs.
Miss my dogs.
Oh, that reminds me of the Lil Wayne song. Man, I miss my dogs. Man, I miss my dog. I don't remember the words, obviously, but man, that's Lil Wayne from like 2002. So, all right, guys. Well, we'll see you on Friday, game day eve at 10 a.m. sharp-ish. And everybody go Gators. And we'll see you on Friday.